This is Ingrid Millington speaking to Fiona Connor about her involvement with the Hambleton Players. Fiona, first of all, could you tell me how and when did you become involved with Hambleton Players?
Okay, I moved into the village about 2003 because there was an amateur dramatic society, probably gave me quite a big pull. And I rang Bev Atwood as they were doing Little Red Riding Hood, and they'd already commenced. So I asked if I could be in the next production. So I joined about 2004, and I joined for The Wizard of Oz, which was a fabulous production. It was my first production. And then I was been in it ever since. And I think the reason I probably joined with two things. One, I've always been interested in drama. I think it was a great way to get used to people in the village and create connections. But my little girl, I wanted her to sort of like follow the same dramatic thread, really. And she used to come and watch when we were rehearsing when she was two. And then Gia joined when she was seven. My son's joined, now my husband's joined. It's a real family affair now. But it was because something I was really, really interested in. And my role there really was just on stage. So I'd go to a rehearsal and then we'd get a script. Then parts were picked and then we just rehearse and, you know, go on and off stage. And I did that for a number of years. And then the chair become very poorly of Hambleton Players, Ron Williams. And we had to have a bit of an emergency meeting. And I was cast rep then on the committee. And we didn't think he'd able to do the show. And it was only about 3 weeks before the show. So we had to recast. And at that present moment, he was the chair of the committee. So they asked me if I would stand up as chair just temporarily. Till Ron was like back on his feet. Unfortunately, Ron passed away, and then I just carried on in the role of chair of Hambleton Players, which was great because it gave me a little bit more insight into what happened on the committee, insight into the planning, the casting, how they pulled everything together. I wanted to get involved with the painting, not that I'm a great painter, but I still wanted to be involved because they used to meet on a Sunday morning and some Mondays. And it just really gave me a real belonging in the village, because moving in the village is fantastic, but it was a really strong group that had been going since 1980. And I think when you join, you really feel part of another family, which was nice. So that's where I was really and why I joined. And we did mainly then, how they used to plan it is we used to have one show a year and then sometimes we'd have two shows a year depending where the panto drops. If the panto dropped in February, we'd only do the one show that year. If the panto dropped in December, then we'd also do a summer show. So there was no real structure of dates when we were doing it or how many we would do or what we were doing. And a lot of the scripts were bought in the latter time. The old committee had it. They used to do a lot of Paul Reeks, and he was an up-and-coming writer. And they'd cost about £480 a script. And then we'd do some great things like Oliver and Annie, which at that particular point, we would make money on the pantomime to pay for the summer show, because the summer show, the royalties on the summer show is very, very expensive. I don't think a lot of people realise how much it is to put a show on. But the rehearsal schedule was long. You know, we could be in there for 6 months, and you're rehearsing on 6 months, and some people would turn up one night, some people wouldn't a night. So it was quite sporadic in some ways, but really, really enjoyable, really enjoyable.
How did you become involved in taking on
the players? Okay, so I remember, and actually reflecting back, Ingrid, you can see that maybe some heart had gone out of the last couple of productions, but I don't think we could have seen that when we were in it. But now when we all reflect back, we can see probably, you know, Bev had done an absolutely sterling job, but she'd had enough, because it is a bit like a hamster wheel. And we'd just done Aladdin, And we had our normal committee meeting, which we have, and we reviewed everything, and then Bev just sat there with the panel of people who were part of Players and been part of Players for a long, long time, and just said, I'm packing it in. That's it. I can't do any more. I don't want to do it. I'm standing down. I burst into tears because, you know, I loved it. It was like my life. Every Tuesday, Thursday night, I used to turn up there. I was now part of it on some Sundays. And it was a massive part of my social life. And I just felt like that had been dragged away from me, and many of the other people probably would feel the same. And at the same time, Bev stood down, Millie stood down, who played the piano, and she ran costumes, did all the costumes. Pam Gill, who was an integral part of Players, stood down. She did all the front of house. Rita was on the committee, stood down. So the whole committee stood down. And it was quite a difficult time, and we couldn't really evaluate it then. But there's two choices if Players decides to close. So if people decide that they're not doing it anymore, the choices are that either somebody stands up and decides that's what they want to do, or the money in the bank is given in the constitution to another amateur dramatic company if somebody else wants to set it up. And then if that closed down, that would have been it. You know, it's hard then to set something up when you've no money in the bank again and all your costumes are given away. And, you know, it's unbelievable what Players has got. So we all went away and had a bit of reflection. And I spoke to John Welburn, who'd been in Players a lot longer than I had been in, and said, listen, shall we put a summer show on? Shall we do something? Because it'll just give us all time to think instead of making a rash decision. And we all thought we were going to be doing a summer show, so let's just continue in that vein. So we had another committee meeting, and we decided to do a show called Bon Voyage, which was done for Bev, really, to say goodbye for all the hard work she'd done. And it was going to be going round all, it was a cruise ship, and it was a cruise ship that was going around like to France, and we took things from loads of French musicals, and then we went through Austria and we did Sound of Music, and we went through all the different musicals on this voyage. Actually, a cruise ship couldn't go to many of those places, but we didn't really care. It's artistic license. And Bev helped us pull it together, and what was quite nice is she stood back, and if we needed her, she'd support us. And she went back on the stage, which was lovely. And it was nice to see her and Rita back in what they did at that particular time. Yeah, it was nice. Rita, unfortunately, had to come out of the part just a couple of weeks before the show because her husband, who was actively part of the committee and Hambleton Players, obviously was seriously ill. And another lady stepped up with Bev. And it was nice seeing Bev. We were doing a show for her to say Bon Voyage to her. And we'd written it ourselves. And it was also to allow her to tread the boards for the last time in Hambleton before she moved to the Isle of Wight. So it was a really significant show. And as we were doing it, John and I, we didn't realise how much hard work it was. What we had to think about, how we had to do it. We had a couple of fractures, I suppose, because he had a way of wanting to do it and I had a way of wanting to do it. And, you know, that was how it used to be with Barry in them days and Bev, because there was two of them doing it together and there's two heads and sometimes you don't have the same vision. And then after Bev had gone, the committee had a meeting and they brought forward somebody externally, and he ran an amateur dramatic society in Castleford that had shut down, and he came to see Players, loved what we did. We wanted to know what his vision was. He was interviewed to take over as the producer-director. All the committee voted and thought it was great. And at that time, John and I thought, well, wait one minute, you know, we're bringing somebody in from outside, from something that started within this village, and even though it was growing, we need to really think about why was it started. And when you look back at the constitution and you look back at it, was all about to have fun, for people in the village, and to do that, we were taking it away from that by probably bringing somebody in from outside. So we asked if we could do a pantomime, and the committee agreed, and we fell back on one of the old scripts, Paul Reeks, because we knew that's what Bev used, and we'd never ever explored anything else. So we pulled back on that script, and we did Georgie Porgy, the old Georgie Porgy pudding and pie, which no one really had seen anything like that. It was a fabulous script. And we had to get a whole new committee round us, a whole new committee of helpers. We had no one sewing still. We had no one playing the piano, which was difficult. So we decided we'd work on backing tracks. Would that work? Would that take us where we are? You know, would we be able to sustain ourselves like that? Because we couldn't find anyone to play the piano, because we used to have like a small band. Anyway, we pulled it off. Bev came to see it, thought it was fabulous. And it went really, really well, and it went really well with the backing tracks. And then we went to the committee, John and I, and said, we want to do this. We want to take this on, and we want backing from people within the society. We don't want anybody external. It needs to be kept into the village. And because we've been part of it for so long, we also know the things that we thought we could strengthen. We also knew some of the challenges that Bev had previously had that we knew we could overcome better than a stranger outside of the village. And we also had a connection with the cast, and we knew their abilities and what they could do, and, you know, how we could strengthen players. So there was a vote. John and I had to go out the room, and there was a couple of days, actually, they had to discuss and then go away and discuss again. And then we got the approval of we can take it over. And what was quite nice for me is Millie and Pam came down to see me once they knew this had happened, because they knew we were going through this. Are we going to take it over? Are we not? And Pam was fantastic, gave me a beautiful card. And Millie, I remember, she grabbed hold of my hands and she said, Fiona, this is what you've been training for recently, because I'd gone back to university to study drama. And I thought that was really, really nice that she'd done that. Yeah. And she actually said the day that Bev had handed the notice in, it was Millie who did turn round and grab my hand and said, do the next show and keep it going. So you felt like you had a blessing, really.
Yeah.
Which was really, really nice from people who had set it up, and they knew hopefully it was in safe hands, and, you know, that we would extend it and everything. So there's been a lot of changes. You know, we've been there 5.5 years now. And
what's different?
I think there's a lot of difference in... I think anyone who takes it over, whoever takes it over from us, will take it to another step. And we wanted to take it to another step. So we thought, right, we're in a village. We're very lucky to have this small theatre. But we don't have to be just amateur, even if we are. Why can't we explore the opportunity of using dry ice? Why can't we explore the opportunity of changing lighting and changing the way we use our backdrops? Why can't we turn the stage a different way, which we did in Dracula Spectacular? We brought the apron, which is traditionally at the front, all the way through the audience. We built trapdoors throughout the audience where people would pop out. You know, we had smoke surrounding the audience. We come in different entrances. So we explored quite a lot. But as a group of a committee, we went and saw quite a lot of shows and didn't really look at the acting. We were looking at how did they put it on? What was the production like? So for us, I would say that the production side of how we put it together is probably heavier than what they would have done previously.
It was a steep learning curve, because if you didn't have anything to do with production to start with, you were just on stage.
Yes.
You would have to kind of take all of the production side on board as well.
Yeah, and so I came off stage to begin with, which I don't think I could have done both. I found it really, really, really difficult, especially for Georgie Porgy. So for the first two shows we did on our own, I said I won't go on stage. And I sort of like could produce it and then could direct it at the same time. Well, John was directing alongside me. So I learned an awful lot at that time. And I did quite a lot of studying, going to watch things and thinking, right, they use blackouts, for instance, and sometimes when you use a blackout and you use like ultraviolet, you could see the people on the stage. And what I wanted to do is, why can you go to some shows and you don't see them? So I'd been to see a couple of shows and I realised that if you put red light at the front of the stage, a very dull red light, and then shine that into the audience, all they can see then is the ultraviolet. They can't see the bodies. So little things like that, I'd go watch things and think, oh God, that's really interesting. How do they do it? Yeah, and I'm not frightened to go and ask someone and say, you know, could you let me know how they do this? And I also knew we had to bring skill in. And the people that we had were not skilled creatively, because even though I would have a vision of I want it to look like this at the end, I probably didn't have the creative head of how to make that happen and how to pull it together. So I'm quite lucky, Ingrid, that my husband is very creative. He's really creative, very good at putting things together. So him and a couple of other guys, we got together on a Sunday, and you were able to say, this is how I want it to finish at the end. So an example of this is Cinderella that we've just done. I didn't want to have a dress drop down from the stage like they'd done years ago in Cinderella when Bev had it. I wanted her to have a true transformation where she would turn on the stage and that brown dress would turn into that blue dress. And that's what I wanted. But their role was to make that happen. And I still, to this day, can't tell you how I managed to do it, but it will look absolutely fantastic. And I also wanted a pumpkin to come out of a chest of drawers. You know, how would that happen? I saw it at the Alhambra. This is how it was. We can't afford to buy the... you know, to buy that in, because it was £2,500 to buy that, yeah, just to buy that effect in, which was amazing. But I knew how it started, I knew how it finished, but how did they get it like that? So we would have quite a lot of forward and backing, but I would never move from the vision I wanted, like people say, no, you can't have that. So in Cinderella, I wanted, we couldn't have a carriage flying through like they do at the Alhambra, but how could I have... we say we're going out to the pumpkin, so we take Cinderella off with a fairy godmother, she's in this beautiful dress, and they're going outside with the pumpkin in the hand to turn it into a magic coach. Luckily, we've got this beautiful cinema screen that came down, and I had projected a pumpkin that span round on the projection that turned into a golden carriage, and then flew off into the air, and then it said end of part one Cinderella. So you know, those extra things that we've put in allowed us, I think, to have a better show, which was great. Other changes that we've had is the material that we use. We now write our own pantomimes.
All right.
Which is great. John and I decided that we were getting pantos and we were trying to force our cast into parts, and then change the parts slightly, which you can't change a script too much because you can get into trouble for it. So we said, why don't we write a panto? And we started one of the pantos, and we've probably wrote about three or four together now. And it's quite nice because we'll have different humour and then we'll put it together and then work on it. And as we've been working together over the last 5 or 6 years, he hasn't been in every one though, because he's just come back with us now. We've got the same understanding now, which is great, because you tend to work in unison and see the same things. Now, that saves us like a £480, so we're not buying the panto in, which allows us then to move to dress circle for some of the more elaborate outfits we need. So we've got dress circle in York, who we go to for our dames costumes, and I always want to make sure the dames look the better than anybody in the show. So when they come on, it's hilarious. And they've got these fabulous, fabulous outfits. So that releases that bit of money for that as well.
Is that from one of the theatres in York? Or?
Yeah, they supply a lot of theatres in York. And Dress Circle, they're in an old barn. It's amazing. Right. And they're absolutely full of costumes. Full of costumes. Loads of costumes. And we know Jill very well now. So we ring her and say, I send her the measurements over. We're going to come for a trying-on session. And they helped us with The Wizard of Oz. They've helped us with the latter shows, because to actually buy the material and make that, what would happen is they would still look great and we'd still pay money, but because we've worked so hard on the production of the show, I didn't want the costumes to look second best, because the costumes previously had always been the best, and now we've worked so hard on the production and some of the pyrotechnics, because we've had two of the guys go on pyrotechnics courses, so we can have big flames going up and amazing, you know, effects now. I didn't want the costumes to look...
second rate.
Yeah, yeah. So we used Dress Circle for some of the main costumes. And so that's what we do there. We've also established that we always do our pantomime in a set time every year, which helps with the hall. And it helps with anyone who wants to be part of Players knows that's when we're doing it, and that's the rehearsal schedule. And we also turn round the show in 14 weeks compared to maybe 4 or 5 months before, which is we have a rehearsal schedule now where everybody knows when they're needed, when they're not needed. So it's quite disciplined. And the girl who's our musical director does that with us, which is fabulous. We do our summer show the same week every year. And it means we have two shows, because what we found is if we were only doing one show a year, you lose the kids. And we've got 16 children in Players now, which is the maximum we can probably take in the changing rooms. And that 16 children brings grandmas, granddads, aunties, uncles, mum and dad 3 times a week and sells tickets to a point in Cinderella. We sold out 2 weeks before, which has not been done. It was amazing. Yes. Yeah, absolutely amazing. People were contacting us like they normally would and said, can I have some tickets? We haven't got a seat left. We haven't got room, which is a great feeling. On top of that, we also wanted to change some of the nights. So we wanted to change the Saturday night as a VIP night. And we sell more a ticket for that. But compared to some pantos, like you're paying £10, we charge £15 a ticket. But for that £15, they come in at 6:15. We have an hour's entertainer, we bring entertainers in, we had barbershop singers last time, we had a great guy that went down a storm, Luke Fleer, or we have some of the kids doing some entertainment, we give away canopies, we give away bubbly, we have a red carpet outside, and in fact, funny enough Ingrid, you know, the doors open at 5:15, we have people outside at 5:30 sat on chairs waiting for the doors opening so they can get the best seat, which is a great way of putting something in, and now you've created this, I need a VIP ticket, I only want VIP. So that one sells out, as soon as you put the tickets out, that's probably sold, it's the first night that we sell out. It's the most expensive night, but they see
how many people can you actually seat in?
100 if we're doing seats.
Right.
Some of the shows, depending on the effects, is we will do tables, so we'll give it like a wine feel. We've changed the way we do the refreshments as well, which obviously makes us more money, which allows us to pull that money in and push things forward. So in the olden days, but in the previous days of Players, they would open the doors for refreshments at the break. So you'd get in there and, you know, 8:30, then you could go for a cup of tea, cup of coffee and a biscuit. We've changed that. So as you arrive, the doors are open. You can buy a glass of wine. There's nibbles. You can have tea and coffee if you wish. So we have 2 different types of wine. We have beer for the guys. It's a much more relaxed atmosphere. We open the doors at the beginning, then we open the doors again at half time. So we double up the refreshment costs then. Yeah. So that's great because we put that money back in. What can we buy with that? Could we do this? Could we do, you know, something else? So we've changed the way that we structure that, the way we structure the tickets and everything else. Only this, I would say, only last year, bearing in mind we've been in it for 5.5 years, only last year is the only year that now we've got the full complement of team. We're still short of a couple of positions, so we've just found someone who wants to sew full time for us, which is great. And a couple of people in the village have also offered, which is great, which I don't think they could have offered before, but they're really excited about it.
I've got a sewing machine, but I'm not sewing.
If I'm desperate, I'll be round. So we've got some people who will do that, because that takes a massive amount of time off me. I can't sew, but I know what I need for outfits for the production kind of thing. So that's great. We don't need a piano player now. We do everything on backing tracks. We've got a great guy who's got his own music studio. He gets all the music and puts all that together. We're now going for a grant for LED lights. We used some LED lights for the last show. And the LED lights, one, are great for the audience because they're cooler. So we don't have the problem of heat. We'll still have the heat problem, but not as heat. They also will last longer, so they're more economical, our LED lights. But the way that you can put a piece of scenery up and just change the lighting from, say, like red and yellow to then purple, it makes the scenery look completely different. It looks like two different sets. So it's an amazing piece of technology that we're going for. We've got a grant for new black curtains because they had greys. We painted the stage black because it was brown. You know, there's loads of things that we have done that we've said we want to change this. We now need people in the lighting box. We're training some young people that have joined us who don't want to be on the stage but are quite interested in production. We've got a couple of people with us who have got autism and Asperger's who need that little bit of extra support behind stage. So Tom, when he joined us, he finds it hard with hard noises. He would only do the prop table. And he's been with us for like 4 years now, and he wanted to do a part, so he didn't want to look at anybody, so we did him as the Gruffalo, so he felt like he could see them but no one could see him. And then he approached me for before Cinderella and said, I really want to do a part, but I need to feel safe on the stage. So we cast him as my husband, because whether that's safe or not, I think Scott would not would disagree, but Tom feels safe in my environment, and if anything went wrong, you know, he felt that would yes. be fine. And we worked together, and he had an absolute fantastic time. He took his arms around me at the end of the show and cried and said it's been the best thing he's ever done. Which is lovely to see how he's grown, because since being in Players, he wouldn't even go catch a train on his own. He lives just on Leeds Road, and now he gets a train on his own. He's now got himself a part-time job because he feels he can communicate with people. And his mum Debs will say a lot of that has been to being in Players and being part of that family, which has been great. And a couple of the other guys have been like chaperones and stuff like that with the dogs, because we've had a couple of animals in it since. And they've grown now, where they say, can we try the stage, or can we go in the lighting box, or could we try this? So it's nice that there's all sorts of different roles within Players. We also have a big painting team on a Sunday, where they used to go in every Sunday. We don't. We go in alternate Sundays because it's better. So we do a longer Sunday stint rather than a shorter Sunday stint. But the planning is quite strong. But we have more people involved, so everyone has their own set role of what they do, you know. And we've got a set designer now, and his daughter's in Players, which is nice. And we've just recently started last year. We've got a girl in the village who signs for the deaf, and that's her job. And she is opened up on Thursday night as she interprets to the deaf, and we had our first 10 deaf people in the audience, which was great.
Lovely.
And we didn't really promote it as much as we should have done, and that's something that we're going to put out into the Selby and surrounding areas, because there is a big deaf community in this area, that we will have a signed performance for Thursdays of each of our show. And just watching Louise is fascinating. It's like watching a performance in itself. And what we did is we had Buttons talk to her in sign language on the Thursday. So he went over to where the Christmas tree was. She was there, and he went, oh, what are you doing here? And she signed to him, and he signed back to her. But they talked and had this conversation, which was quite nice. So it was like she was part of the performance. And then at the end of the performance, she came up and sang with us all and everything. So it has come a long way. It is a monster to manage. We've got a waiting list, a long waiting list. And the issues that Players are having, and it's probably one of the biggest challenges for me, is, you know, I want it to be inclusive. And we don't have many people leaving, so there's never a space for someone to join. That the only issue is we don't have a big enough changing room. And until maybe the hall is extended or anything else like that, that's the only way we're going to be able to grow the group into where it need it to be, really. But what is quite nice, it's become profitable. We put a lot of money back into the hall. How can we buy more scenery? How can we do this? And Players is now working quite hard with some of the other people who want to use it in the community, because we've got a beautiful stage.
Yeah.
We've got brilliant sets. We've got things that are only used twice a year. So we want it to be accessible, that groups can come and ask us. Like, we've got a group that's come to see us from Menston in Leeds and asked if they can borrow their Cinderella dress for their show, you know, which is nice. And, you know, some of the things, and I think we're very lucky to have this mini theatre within the village that should be extended out in the village. Yeah. You know, if we've got dance groups that are using the village hall as dancers, they should be putting their performances on there, you know, because it is a beautiful stage, and there's lots of props, costumes, thousands of pounds worth of things that could actually help,
yeah,
you know, most of the other societies, really.
So, how much would you say it cost to put production on?
£3,000 to put production on. I know, it's quite shocking, isn't it?
It is.
That you've got your rent for your hall.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on top of that, you've got all your costumes. And then you've got all the stuff that you buy, that, you know, like all your refreshments and things like that. Because we only charge, you know, people, when we have our AGM, they only pay £1 to be a member, which they pay, and kids are not members. And when they come every week, they pay £1. So the money that they pay doesn't cover the rent of the hall.
No.
It doesn't cover the rent of the hall. It covers all the biscuits the children eat at the rehearsal schedule, that's it. So we give free tea and coffee and everything because, you know, that's what we do. So £3,000. This last show would have cost us more because we had two dames in it, so we would have gone a little bit more on costumes, and we haven't got the costume costs back yet, but it was probably one of our most profitable shows. So I reckon, and it's only loose figures, but I think we did about, and we normally will do probably about £4,000 on a show, so we could make £1,000 or £500 depending if we're buying stuff as well, because we buy every year. New costumes, new things and everything.
Oh, new equipment for actually usually on stage.
Yeah, so we bought new wings. This year we bought three new backdrops, because backdrops are very expensive, and then when you paint them and then you pull them over, they start cracking.
Yes.
And then they're very heavy and they're in the loft, and I'm trying to clear the whole loft out so it can be more accessible, really, for most groups, where we can have more storage space. And they take an awful lot of room. So when we did Oliver, I went to a printer and asked him how much would it be to recreate a photograph on a backdrop. And it's a very thin piece of cotton. You can put it up into tiny little cardboard boxes. You can't believe you can just carry it. Well, you can't carry a normal backdrop. And they're noisy as you're moving them across. And it was £360, including VAT for one, which is expensive. But I got it quite generic. So we used it for Oliver and we used it for Cinderella, but they were used differently. So you wouldn't have known it was the same one. And what we did is we painted the flats. And what we've done now is we've painted the flats as stones, which go with this backdrop. And then now what we do is put the wood away under the stage or in the shed, which means that when we get that backdrop down, we don't have to paint, we're getting the getting the sides on. So we're trying to eliminate all the time we spend doing players. So then we bought another three this time. And we said we'd invest three from the profits we had last time. So they cost us £1,000 for three. But they're magnificent.
Yeah.
Absolutely magnificent. And so what we've said is every show we're going to buy a different one. And what we're going to do is establish in February, on one of the days, we're going to get all the backdrops down, get rid of everything in a van that we don't need, and recreate what's there. So they're lighter, they're easier to put up. They're easier if somebody wants to hire the stage to pull them to one side. They don't need us bungeeing up. So it's all about how can we change what we've got to get it into this century kind of thing. Yes. and make it a little bit better. So, yeah, we do have a lot of costs. But I know the last show we did, the income was about £5,000, which is the most we've ever done.
That's very good.
Yeah, and that's to do on ticket sales. Yeah. But we've still got people in the village that have never been part of it. And we, you know, like, who come and said, I've lived here for 10 years, never even knew you did it, which, that's a hard thing for us. You know, so, yeah, some people still don't even know.
It's in the newsletter?
Yeah, some people don't even know we do it.
It's in the newsletter?
I know.
They can't read the newsletter?
No, I don't think they do. They don't know how important it is. And the big banners that are around the village.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it is great, and we have got a lot of people, and it is tiring. So the more we can eliminate by doing all these fancy backdrops and everything else, that the better it is for us. But it's just about... Oh, and another thing, which is a massive change for me, because the community is quite important for the hall, is I never really understood why we didn't have brownies or rainbows or whatever. I think they used to go years and years ago, but they stopped coming, and they never came. And I found out that brownies were going to another theatre group, and I thought, why aren't they coming to the village? So we worked really hard with brownies and rainbows, and they come up to the pantomimes all the time, and Young Voices have come as well. And we also use the adult choir on the Friday night at Christmas, not this Christmas, but most Christmases, where they come in and they will sing half an hour before the show starts, and we'll give away free mince pies, and, you know, to try and get everybody really, really Christmassy, because that's the first thing the village does. And then we've got all the other events that happen in the village. So, yeah, it's a bit of a monster. Ask me if I'll still be here in 5 years. I'll let you know then. But it is good. But now I can get back on the stage, which is quite nice.
Yes.
But I don't go on the stage till the weekend before the show. So somebody always reads my part, because as soon as I get on the stage, I then can't direct, because I'm only interested in myself.
Have to be. Yes.
Yeah. So that's hard, but they're all used to it now, so that's fine.
Thank you very much for the conversation.
I hope that helps. Thank you for your time, Ingrid.
Thank you.